And moving on now to our Week in Review, and joining us are two stalwarts of our Week in Review team, Craig Sandler, General Manager of State House News Service. Welcome back, Craig. Always good to see you.
I'm a stalwart. That's great.
We've promoted you. And Renee Loth, columnist with the Boston Globe and editor of Architecture Boston. Great to have you. You're a stalwart as well.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon.
So let's begin with politics. What else? With just a little over 3 weeks ago until Election Day, in the race for the U.S. Senate, Senator Scott Brown had to apologize this week to Democrat Elizabeth Warren. Here's why. Warren ran the following ad explaining the work she did on behalf of Travelers Insurance, which she maintains helped victims of asbestos poisoning.
My father was diagnosed with mesothelioma and suffered greatly at the end because he suffocated to death.
Scott Brown is attacking Elizabeth Warren about her work. Elizabeth did go to the Supreme Court and she fought for us.
Scott Brown has never been there for us. He's trying to use our suffering to help himself. He ought to be ashamed.
So that was the ad. After a campaign stop in Taunton on Wednesday, Scott Brown said it featured paid actors. He said, quote, a lot of them are paid, whereas he uses regular people in his commercials. The Warren campaign quickly condemned the remarks, and the Brown campaign issued a statement apologizing, saying it was wrong for me to have jumped to those conclusions, and I apologize to those I offended. So, Craig Sandler, let me start with you. What's your take on this? Does that put this latest campaign contretemps to rest, or what?
No, quite the opposite. I mean, you know, Brown is winning this race narrowly, the polls show, and we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks. But, you know, he's in large part, it's because I think the Native American charges have had some traction. And this basically takes that high ground away from him. I mean, it's going to be a really close election, and the independents are going to decide it. And in large part, he's gotten as far as he has in a state where, you know, Obama enjoys 57% of the vote in the polls, you know, because he's done well raising those questions, Elizabeth, about Warren not being who she claims to be. Well, guess what? When you say something is just flat out wrong in the service of accusing someone of being sleazy, and then you have to apologize for it, you know, that
it sets you back.
Oh, man, yeah. Does it take a card out of your hand?
Renee, you're nodding your head.
I mean, I think, first of all, I don't think that Scott Brown is necessarily winning this race. I do think the math still favors Elizabeth Warren only because it'll be a big Democratic turnout on Election Day. But I would say that Scott Brown wasn't, you know, completely making it up about other times in the past. There have been actors hired to appear in political ads. He had no evidence, and he was really wrong to just, you know, pop off like that.
Well, those are victims in those ads.
Yes, of course, they're real victims. I remember, though, in one of those Willie Horton ads, the Bush, George Bush Sr. Had hired actors to be in this revolving door and making this symbol of the revolving door, to be in a revolving door ad. Some people old enough to remember that race may remember big controversy there. So, yeah, it really puts a tarnish on his good guy image. And I think that does
I don't know why
take him down a peg.
Yeah, I don't know why he's going there because, of course, elections are often about movement in the polls, and he has actually risen, which is a good sign. But around the time he was rising, first, second debate in that race, he turned really negative. And why he's not talking about Obamacare, why he's not talking about the issues that got him elected and instead has taken this negative shift is beyond me. I presume that the answer is he's been told Obama's going to win, obviously, in Massachusetts. You're not going to get enough votes if you if you only talk positively about your issues, so you have to be, you know, you have to be bad, Scott.
But meanwhile, this argument about Travelers continues. Here's an ad from the Brown campaign condemning the work that Warren did for Travelers Insurance Company.
The Globe says Elizabeth Warren was a key lawyer in an asbestos case working for big corporations. Warren helped Travelers Insurance restrict payments to victims of asbestos poisoning. The results were disastrous for victims. Elizabeth Warren is just not who she says she is.
So this is a tough issue. It's a tough issue because it's really, really hard to understand. It's back and forth, and I'm just trying to imagine how voters are getting a hold of it. But Renee, help us sort out a little bit this. I mean, Warren did work for Travelers, but she took the case all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, it was a settlement case, right? She was trying to get the victims not to agree not to sue in order to be able to get part of the settlement. So it's a little bit like the 9/11 victims situation. And, you know, it doesn't... You know, you might be able to say that she was getting people to give away their rights, but it's hard to say that she didn't work in favor of the victims. Later on, after she left the case, Travelers was able to wiggle out of its commitments, and so the victims didn't, in fact, get what they had believed they would get under the settlement that Elizabeth worked on. I think I'm getting that
right. No, I think you got it exactly right.
You know, so there's a lot of, you know, ifing to go around there.
Meanwhile, Warren launched a new ad today arguing that just one vote, just one senator could put Republicans in control of the U.S. Senate. So she's banking on this idea that control of the Senate is her best argument. Is she right, Craig? Or Renee, go ahead.
I would
jump
just say that,
first.
That's happening all over the country. I mean, that all of the races have come down to have been nationalized. You know, the House races as well. You know, they're saying, you know, you can say you're, for example, in the Tyranny to Say race, you know, you could say that you're a moderate, but you'll be voting for that, you know, evil guy Boehner, you know, and the same thing on the Senate side. There's, you know, a sense that what really hangs in the balance here is because our country has become so polarized and so unable to work across the aisle, what's at stake here is a larger question of who's going to control the houses.
Yeah, and the independents who made Deval Patrick governor, they're going to respond better to that ad than the Travelers insurance ad.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, let's move on, if we can, to another closely watched campaign. This one is getting very nasty, and it's between Republican Richard Tesei, who's challenging Democratic Congressman John Tierney, an 8-term incumbent. Now, Tierney continues to fend off questions about what he knew or didn't know about his brother-in-law's illegal offshore gambling activities and the involvement of his wife, Patrice, who spent time in jail because of it. Last night, they really mix it up. Here they are on NECN.
You can't run on the issues, Richard.
This doesn't have
you
any, this,
don't have a clue.
This doesn't
but when
have
it takes
to
be a member of Congress to represent the middle class.
This doesn't have anything to do with your wife.
Then why
did
you leave her out of it? Why do you have her picture on all the mailings that you do?
You know
why do you have her picture
Congressman,
on TV?
You're the person who signed
Richard,
the financial disclosure report.
Ugly.
October.
But Tierney's held the seat for 16 years. But here's what I get. Here's what fascinates me. According to recent polls, voters, a lot of them are still undecided about this race. So, Renee, let's start with you. Can Tierney hang on? I mean, he's the incumbent here, and a lot of people are still undecided.
Yeah, I think, Tierney is seriously weakened. And he was a weak candidate 2 years ago when he was running against that guy Hudak, who was kind of a birther and a little bit, you know, out there on the fringes, whereas Tesei is very moderate, very, you know, it must really be galling to those Republican, you know, sort of conservatives that their best shot to win a seat in Massachusetts
very
is
telling.
You know, gay, pro-abortion, you know, believes in climate change, didn't sign the Norquist Pledge, I'm Yao, you know.
And yet John Boehner did come for a visit.
Well.
Yeah. But yes, exactly, and that's the reason that I think Tierney hangs on at all is because he's been able to paint Tesei as just another member of the Republican club. And even though that is a Republican-leaning district, that, you know, the state legislators are Republican from there, Tesei indeed, you know, I think that Tierney is playing up the danger that Tesei would be just another Republican vote.
Craig, do you think that the ugliness of this risks turning voters off entirely to this race?
Well, it hasn't been ugly up till now. And, you know, the glances, the times that I've paid attention to this race, I've noticed that actually Richard has forsworn up till now raising the issue, making hay out of it. You can imagine what a Scott Brown would do, you know, in the same situation, never mind a Mitt Romney or a Barack Obama. And actually Tesei has avoided using that in a way that I think has really been appealing. And it also matches his personality. Even in that clip, you could hear Richard being calm as he was saying very provocative things, and I think if he keeps up with that, and if people can sense his personality, which is pretty measured and deliberate, he's a complex guy and just right for winning this kind of race in Massachusetts like Bill Weld.
And in any race, when you can say to an incumbent, what did you know and when did you know it? You know that it's not good for the incumbent no matter what.
And in
you
a way, it doesn't
right
even matter what he answers, the fact that you can ask the question.
Yeah, and people in the district are unhappy and properly so about the handling of the whole thing. And they don't believe T. tyranny, and tyranny hasn't been simple and consistent. And if you're not that, with charges like this, you are really vulnerable if you've got an attractive challenger, and he does.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another race that, frankly, we haven't actually paid enough attention to on Radio Boston, but it could have a big impact on the face of Beacon Hill. Senate President Therese Murray is up for re-election in the Plymouth Barnstable District. She's facing a challenge from Republican Thomas Keyes, who lost to her 2 years ago. Craig, tell us a little bit about this race. It seems like it's turned pretty competitive. Why?
Well, I mean, it was really competitive 2 years ago because those are conservative towns, Falmouth and part of, Barnstable, which is that massive conglomeration of villages, and a lot of these Cape and Islands towns that that are traditionally fertile ground for Republicans, certainly for Scott Brown. So the base is there, and Keyes has been an effective propounder of the notion that Murray is part of the Beacon Hill machine that's opaque.
She's been there 20 years,
power.
Right in the Senate.
Exactly. She might. He subtly acknowledges, well, she might be good for the district, of course. But look what she does to the state of the as a whole. We need a change. I'm a business person. I know I can make the change you seek. And he lost by 3,600 votes out of 73,000.
Yeah, but let's remember. I'm going back to first principles again. That 2010 was not a presidential year. That was a big year for the Republicans, big sweep year. Not so much in Massachusetts, but I think that the fact that he came close 2 years ago doesn't necessarily mean that he'll be in better shape this
but
time.
Murray hadn't been named in any hadn't been mentioned in any indictments. Scandal. She was not indicted. She was not implicated. But all of Beacon Hill was, and she was mentioned, and her title was mentioned by name, in those documents. And obviously, Keyes has quite fairly made use of that. So, if you're looking for 4,000 votes out of 75,000, it will be more because of the presidential race. You're right. It's hard. It's still hard to foretell. Yep. Having said that, I think that, in large measure, Renee, you are right. The people who are going to be in the ballot booth are not going to be turning out in droves to vote for Mitt Romney.
And, Keyes has also been hoist on his own petard now, right? There is this new story coming out that this fellow who is, campaigning on ethics and transparency
didn't report a big
mortgage that he took out with money from one of his donors.
Who did that story? State House News
Service. Well, you were going to toot your own horn, so I'm tooting it for you.
Not to toot my own horn.
Thank you.
Okay. I was waiting for you to get around
to it. But no, it's true. That's a slender, it's not a slender reed to hang on that you had an ethical problem. It's the opposite of a slender reed.
Yeah.
As with Brown, you don't want to be guilty of the sins you're accusing.
That's right. It's hypocrisy, which is the thing that voters can't stand.
You're right.
Let's move on, if we can, to one story which takes us a little bit outside the realm of straight-up politics and into the realm of civil liberties, and that is the fact that this week the Boston chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union wants the Boston Police Department to stop monitoring peaceful demonstrations and activists and to stop categorizing those peaceful protest groups as, quote, extremists. Documents released by the ACLU show that the Boston Regional Intelligence Center has conducted extensive surveillance and investigations of lawful political activities, Occupy Boston, etc. So here's Massachusetts ACLU Director Carol Rose, who says the documents really do show a pattern of labeling peaceful groups as extremists.
Acts that have no criminal nexus whatsoever, talking about who should be a speaker at a church panel, for example, are listed under headings of criminal acts with labels like extremist, domestic terrorist threat, homeland security threat. But all the activities detailed in the reports themselves are purely protected free speech.
So here's the thing. The Boston Regional Intelligence Center is one of more than 40 so-called fusion centers that were set up across the country after 9/11 to share intelligence amongst federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. So, Renee, let's start with you. You heard Carol Rose. Does this sound like law enforcement going too far or legitimate policing?
Well, I do find it disturbing, not just on civil liberties grounds, but on practical grounds. I mean, we have a situation in Boston right now where, because of the awful botching of the drug cases by Annie Dukin, We are going to have, you know, a lot of new criminal problems on the streets of Boston, and to be spending time and resources and, you know, even attention on these woolly-headed peaceniks. I mean, I know some of these people, and they are to think of them as being, you know, terrorist threats. I mean, it's just such a distraction, and I think a waste of resources.
Craig, I mean, the Boston police said this week that they'll review the accusations from the ACLU, but they also point out that the Regional Intelligence Center doesn't conduct surveillance on protest groups, that's what they said, without reasons to believe they are tied to crime or terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they ought to review them, and as one who generally actually tends to err on the side of law enforcement, particularly in these cases of Homeland Security, because you can't get it perfect, and it's better perhaps to color outside the lines, you know, in the direction of suppression of liberties, said the journalist. But never mind that.
Really?
So that establishes a bona fide that I'm willing to give the cops the benefit of the doubt a lot of the time, but not in this case. There's not a scintilla of, you know, evidence that they found anything to help them keep people safe.
Yeah, this is a situation where the police say that they were supposed to have cleared records after 90 days, and maybe there's some sort of technical glitch there that will explain some of this.
Yeah.
But just the very specter of the surveillance makes me nervous.
Yeah, what you
well,
buying?
We are, listeners, I should let you know that we're going to be talking a lot more about this next week, so share your thoughts with us now at radioboston.org.
And this leaves us time to move on to our hubbub, that story that maybe flew below the fold, off the front page, didn't get the attention it deserved. Let's start with you, Renee. What about your hubbub?
Okay. Well, I had two, but I think I'll this one. So forget the truck, you know, forget the barn jacket. This important political indicator was hiding on the names page of the Boston Globe, which I never read.
The
gossip page. A little item that said that Scott Brown and his wife took a break last Sunday night to have a nice, quiet dinner at Kowloon, the restaurant on Route 1 in Saugus.
That's the Scott we know and voted for.
They served the little tiki drinks with the umbrellas in them and everything.
You can't miss
and,
it.
You know, I would bet my political instincts to bet that Elizabeth Warren has never eaten there. that is a real true indicator. But I don't know if it says really what it says, that is she an elitist, you know?
But maybe she's eating
at
the steakhouse.
Some shame?
You know, the one with the big cactus? Maybe she's eating there.
The Hilltop Steakhouse.
I think she probably eats red meat.
Craig Sandler, let's move on to you. Your hubbub.
We can. Best for all concerned, I'd say. Actually, I thought you were going for Bill Weld, by the way, in your hubbub, because Bill's moving back to Boston.
Yes,
now, there's a hubbub for you. But mine is the pro right to repair people who previously had agreed with the auto manufacturers to tell people not to vote at all on question one. Dropped their stance this week, and now they want us to vote yes on question one, but the manufacturers still want us to skip it. I don't think they necessarily want us to vote no. I'm advising on question one that voters run away screaming in terror.
Should we do our listeners the service and just remind them, Craig, very, very briefly what question one is?
Go. All right. The right to repair bill was passed by the legislature in a compromise this summer, and therefore the battling sides, well, one of the sides that had put question one on the ballot said it's not necessary to vote on this at all. You don't have to pass it. Skip question one. They abandoned that stance this week in making things so complex that literally the news service said that lawmakers couldn't quite understand. Lawmakers questioned, couldn't quite understand what the stance was of the AAA and the proponents.
It's the weirdest story. Talk about skipping it. Yeah. So we should all feel that we've got a law, a right to repair law. But if you're not quite sure that it's enough, you can vote for question one.
It's stricter than the compromise legislation that was passed.
Exactly.
In its enforcement. That's what the big difference is.
All right.
We could go on,
but let's
never talk about it again.
Previously recommended.
Megna, we have got time.
So my hubbub, briefly, I just because I want to say it, binders full of women.
Yes, oh, yeah.
Not, but it's not that per se. It's the fact that I was watching the debates on TV and had my laptop, so I was doing the social media ride along at the same time. And A, I have to say, it's more than a little disturbing that as soon as the words come out of a politician's mouth, there's a Tumblr for it, yeah, or someone has grabbed the website for it. And I thought to myself, there's so much activity on social media about this binders full of women thing. People are being very creative with the meme, etc. How many of these people are actually going to then now vote?
Good.
Because it's the same folks who put question. All their effort into social media that maybe are the low turnout group when it comes to election day. So my reminder, if you care enough to make a meme live forever, care enough to vote on in November 6th.
Hear, hear.
All right, well, here's my Tumblr. It's about baseball and two words, go Tigers. I loved it that they dispatched the Yankees last night. But here's the thing. Red Sox fans shouldn't get too snarky about this because Alex Rodriguez, $29 million. He manages one hit during the playoffs. he's benched. But here's the thing. Biggest payroll in baseball, Philadelphia Phillies, second biggest, didn't make the Final Four. Boston Red Sox, third biggest, finished dead last in the American League East. Los Angeles Dodgers, fourth biggest, no show. So once again, this lesson about paying obscene amounts for past performance, it hurts the game and doesn't even end up guaranteeing you a place
That's
in the playoffs.
So money doesn't buy heart.
Get smart, Red Sox and baseball. That's my message.
That'll teach the 1%.
Craig Sandler, General Manager of Statehouse News Service, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. And Renee Loth,
thank
Boston
you.
Columnist and editor of Architecture Boston. Great pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Stay with us because coming up, we'll hear from former Lieutenant Governor Carrie Healey about a taxi ride that reinvigorated her this election season. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.